Today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online is brought to you by Native. Get yourself 20% off your first purchase. Visit nativedeodorant.com/ghost and use promo code GHOST during checkout. 20% off your first purchase. nativedeodorant.com/ghost and use promo code GHOST during checkout. It's official. Real Ghost Stories Online and the Grave Talks will be live at the Crescent Hotel for one night only, August 11th, 2019 at 7 p.m. And you are invited. I'm Tony Brewski from Real Ghost Stories Online, and I can't wait to meet you at the Crescent Hotel this August 11th for an awesome night of ghost stories. We're going to have a lot of fun at the Crescent Hotel that night as we record an episode of Real Ghost Stories Online live. The stories on this episode come from you guys, the audience, live at the Crescent. Then it's a live episode of The Grave Talks as we talk with Crescent historian and paranormal investigator Keith Scales. We'll learn all about the history of the hotel, how it came to be, why it's haunted today, what goes on at the haunted Crescent Hotel, and allow you guys to ask your questions as well with a live Q&A segment. It's a fun night full of ghost stories at the historic haunted Crescent Hotel, a hotel that we've had many stories from shared about over the years here on the show. Tickets are only $25 a piece and are on sale now. Go to realghoststoriesonline.com and click on the Live at the Crescent Hotel banner to purchase yours. They are very limited, though, and when they are gone, they are gone. Real Ghost Stories Online and The Grave Talks live at the Crescent Hotel in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, August 11th, 2019. Get your tickets now at realghoststoriesonline.com. From realghoststoriesonline.com, it's another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. Tony and Jenny Brewski joining you once again. Thanking you, of course, in advance for letting a friend know about the show. Please, if you like it, do us a little favor. Show a little love out there on Facebook, Twitter, or whatever social media platform you frequent. Pinterest, maybe. And share the show. That's what other folks, that's how they find out about us and how we end up getting more great stories to share with you every single week on the show. And also showing us some love on those platforms as well. iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube. Your 2 seconds of extra support there by pressing the 5-star button or writing a quick little snippet of what you think of the show greatly helps us. So if you wouldn't mind spending 2 seconds in doing that for us, we greatly appreciate it. We spend several hours a week putting these shows together for you. So a little thank you in return would be greatly appreciated. On today's show, we are going to cover a topic of a new movie that's coming out, Annabelle. And we're going to share the real story of Annabelle. And I want to say this, I'm working on trying to get an interview on the topic with someone who has a bit more expertise on it. But for now, I thought we can just cover with the information that that does exist out there. Because what gets me about what I've seen in the preview for that Annabelle movie is it doesn't look all that based on the real story.
Yeah.
And I don't really... I mean, it looks like it's going to be a good movie, but The Conjuring was pretty well based on the House of Darkness, House of Light, or really more so what the Warrens' experience was. This Annabelle, I mean, it's the same producer and creator and all that, but I don't know. I'm kind of disappointed. I shouldn't say that for sure. I haven't seen the movie yet or anything, but I'm thinking as a lot of folks are getting so excited about seeing it, let's get everyone up to date on what the real story is, and we'll get it straight from the New England Paranormal Society's website, which is what the Warrens are part of. And we'll talk about that a little bit.
Okay.
In that case, we got some calls. We got some other great ghost stories for you today on the show. So stick around. We got some good stuff coming your way today with Real Ghost Stories Online. If you have a real ghost story, you can call into us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 855-853-4802, 855-853-4802 is the phone number to dial in, and you just leave us your ghost story. We may play it back in a future episode. Of course, you can write into us on our website at realghoststoriesonline.com. So, to get the show started. Should we talk about Annabelle?
Yeah, let's do that.
What is your knowledge of the subject of Annabelle?
I know very little other than at the very beginning of The Conjuring, there's the creepy doll.
Yep.
And the 5 minutes of The Conjuring that I saw, that was it.
Okay. Yeah, and really, it's funny because within The Conjuring, that was almost kind of like a premise of these people investigate paranormal instances. Annabelle really had nothing to do with the Conjuring case.
Right.
It's curious as to how it was brought in there or why it was brought in there. I'm guessing it was brought in there with the mindset of, hey, if we splice this little bit of this other story in here, we have a follow-up movie.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's probably exactly what they did.
But I heard they're also working on a Conjuring 2, which...
How do you do that?
I don't!
How do you
that's
do
where
that?
It's that's where it's like Amityville 2 or Amityville 3, and they were just like even more far-fetched.
Yeah.
You know, so... here's the story of Annabelle. This is like I said, this is coming from the Warrens. This is coming from the New England Paranormal Society. This is just direct from them. So this is what the real story of Annabelle is. So make note in your mind when you see the movie. You can tell your friends, no, here's what really happened. And your friends will throw popcorn at you saying, shut up and watch the movie. Here he goes. In 1970, a mother purchased an antique Raggedy Ann doll from a hobby store. There's difference number one right there, because in the movie it's this creepy ass looking doll. I'm guessing Raggedy Ann just wasn't gonna pass. So anyhow, continue.
Does everybody know what a Raggedy Ann looks like? It's the one with the red yarn hair.
I think everyone knows what Raggedy Ann, don't they?
I don't know.
I suppose young people may not.
Yeah, because it's kind of an older toy. We were maybe the last generation that would play with a Raggedy Ann. I haven't seen one in a store.
No, either
ever.
Have I. There was a Raggedy Ann Saturday morning cartoon in the 80s.
Oh, really?
When we were kids. But I think that was probably the end of it. But
okay.
Yeah. It's a Raggedy Ann doll. The doll was a present for her daughter, Donna, on her birthday. Donna, at the time, was a student in college preparing to graduate with her nursing degree and resided in a tiny apartment with her roommate, Angie, a nurse as well. And this is, I think, what was portrayed. This part here was portrayed in The Conjuring. Pleased with the doll, Donna placed it on her bed as a decoration and didn't give it a second thought until a few days later. Within that time, both Donna and Angie noticed that there appeared to be something very strange and creepy about the doll. The doll apparently moved on its own, relatively unnoticeable movements at first, like a change in position, but as time passed, the movement became more noticeable. Donna and Angie would come home to find the doll in a completely different room from which they had left it. Sometimes the doll would be found cross-legged on the couch with its arms folded. Other times it was found upright, standing on its feet, leaning against the chair in the dining room. Several times Donna was placing the doll on the couch before leaving work and would return home to find the doll back in her room on the bed with the door closed. Annabelle the doll may not... the doll not only move, but would actually write as well. But a month into their experiences, Donna and Angie began to find penciled messages on parchment paper reading, "Help us" and "Help Lou." The handwriting looked to belong to that of a small child. The creepy part about the message was not the wording, but the way they were written. At the time, Donna had never kept parchment paper on which the notes were written in the house, so where did that come from? One night, Donna came home to find the doll had moved again. This time, it was on her bed. Donna had come to find that this was typical of the doll, but somehow she knew this time it was different. Something wasn't right. A sense of fear came over her when she inspected the doll and saw what looked like blood drops on the back of its hands in its chest. Seemingly from nowhere, a liquidy red substance had appeared on the doll. Scared and desperate, Donna and Angie decided it was time to seek expert advice. Not knowing where to turn, they contacted a medium, and a seance was held. Donna was then introduced to the spirit of Annabelle Higgins. The medium related the story to Annabelle, to both Donna and Angie. Annabelle was a young girl that resided on the property before the apartment was built. There were happy times. She was a young girl of only 7 years old when her lifeless body was found in the field upon which the apartment complex now stands. The spirit relayed to the medium that she felt comfort with Donna and Angie and wanted to stay with them and be loved. Feeling compassion for Annabelle and her story, Donna gave her permission to inhabit the doll and stay with them. They were soon to find out, however, that Annabelle was not what she appeared to be. This was no ordinary case and definitely no ordinary doll. Lou was friends with Donna and Angie and had been with them since the day the doll arrived. Lou had never been fond of the doll and on several occasions warned Donna that it was evil and to get rid of it. Donna
had a compassionate tie to the doll, and not giving much credence to Lou's feelings, kept it. Donna's decision turned out to be a terrible mistake. Lou awoke one night from a deep sleep in the panic. Once again, he had a reoccurring bad dream, only this time somehow something seemed different. It was as though he was awake but couldn't move. He looked around the room but couldn't discern anything out of the ordinary, and then it happened. Looking down towards his feet, he saw the doll, Annabelle. Began to slowly glide up his leg, move over his chest, and then stopped. Within seconds, the doll was strangling him. Paralyzed and gasping for breath, Lou, at the point of asphyxiation, blacked out. Lou awoke the next morning, certain it wasn't a dream. Lou was determined to rid himself of that doll and the spirit that possessed it. Lou, however, would have one more terrifying experience with Annabelle. Preparing for a road trip the next day, Lou and Angie were reading over maps alone in her apartment. The apartment seemed eerily quiet. Suddenly, rustling sounds came from Donna's room that aroused fear that someone had possibly broken into the apartment. Lou, determined to figure out who or what it was, quietly made his way to the bedroom door. He waited for the noises to stop before entering and turning on the light. The room was empty except for Annabelle, whom was tossed on the floor in the corner. Lou scoured the room for forced entry, but nothing was out of place. But as he got close to the doll, he got the distinct impression that somebody was behind him. Spinning around, he was quick to realize that nobody else was there. Then in the flash, he found himself grabbing for his chest, doubled over, cut and bleeding. His shirt was stained with blood, and upon opening his shirt, there on his chest was what looked like to be 7 distinct claw marks, 3 vertically and 4 horizontally. All were hot like burns. These scratches healed almost immediately, half gone the next day, fully gone by day 2.
All right, back to the show in just a second. First, I want to thank our supporter today, Native. They create safe, simple, effective products that people use in the bathroom every single day. They create products with trusted ingredients and trusted performance. If you're not convinced, check out their 7,000 five-star reviews from customers. That's what I love about the world today. There's no, like, I wonder if it's any good. Reviews from real people, and you get that many 5-star reviews, you know you got a good product right there. In fact, you can get 20% off your first purchase. You want to try it out for yourself? Visit nativedeodorant.com/ghost. Use promo code ghost during checkout. Get 20% off your first purchase. So what do I love about Native? Well, it's you know what you're getting. It is formulated without aluminum, parabens, sulfates, and a bunch of other stuff that you can't enunciate, but you know it's not good for you. You know, I personally like to avoid aluminum because it may be linked to some cancers and illnesses. So I think not, you know, happening that all over your body is probably a good idea. It's filled with ingredients found in nature, such as coconut oil, shea butter, tropica starch. Yeah, good stuff that helps with deodorizing and absorbing wetness and moisturizing. It's made in the U.S. with ingredients thoughtfully sourced from around the world. No animal testing. Free shipping and returns. It's just good stuff. And it works. It really does work. Native can hang with your workout, your busy mom life, 16 hours a day, doing 30 podcasts in a day, and they're all an hour long, and you only have 24 hours to do them. Whatever you may be doing, Native is just, it's a quality product. Like I said, over 7,000 five-star reviews. You can check them out. They've been featured on the Today Show, Women's Health, Elle, Good Morning America, Pop Sugar, Nylon, Hello Giggles, and so many more. Just, if you're looking for a great deodorant and you're looking for something that you know what's in it and you don't have to worry about what you're rubbing on yourself, that kind of sounded bad. But you don't have to worry about that. Native is what you want. You can even subscribe, so you don't have to worry about it running out. In fact, if you subscribe, you save 17%, $2 a stick, and have it conveniently delivered right to your door every 1, 2, 3, 4 months. Every month you go through it. You set it up, shows up, easy enough. That's what I love about it, too. Check it out. 20% off your first purchase. Go to nativedeodorant.com/ghost. Use promo code GHOST during checkout. 20% off that first purchase. NativeDeodorant.com/ghost. Use promo code GHOST, G-H-O-S-T, during checkout.
Donna finally was willing to believe the spirit in the house was not that of a young girl, but inhuman and demonic in nature. After Lou's experiences, Donna felt It was time to seek real expert advice and contacted Episcopal priest named Father Hagen. Father Hagen felt it was a spiritual matter, and he felt he needed to contact a higher authority in the church, so he contacted Father Cook, who immediately contacted the Warrens. Ed and Lorraine Warren immediately took interest in the case and contacted Donna concerning the doll. The Warrens, after speaking with Donna, Angie, and Lou, came to the immediate conclusion that the doll itself was not, in fact, possessed, but manipulated by an inhuman presence. Spirits possess inanimate objects like houses or toys. They possess people. An inhuman spirit can attach itself to a place or object. That is what occurred in the Annabelle case. The spirit manipulated the doll and created the illusion of it being alive in order to get recognition. Truly, the spirit was not looking to stay attached to the doll. It was looking to possess a human host. The spirit, or in this case, an inhuman demonic spirit, was essentially in the infestation stage of the phenomenon. It first began moving the doll around the apartment by means of teleportation to arouse the occupant's curiosity in hopes that they would give it recognition. Then, predictably, the mistake of bringing a medium into the apartment to communicate with it, the inhuman spirit now had to communicate through the medium. Then preyed on the girl's emotional vulnerabilities by pretending to be a rather harmless, lost young girl with which, during the seance, was allowed permission from Donna to haunt the apartment. So this is where they granted permission. It's not like it just could have done all this on its own. The people actually had to say, yes, you can come haunt us.
Okay.
So it was granted permission. And so far as demonic is a negative spirit, it then set about causing patently negative phenomena to occur. It aroused fear through weird movements of the doll. It brought about the materialization of disturbing handwritten notes, the symbolic drops of blood in the doll, and ultimately it even attacked Lou, leaving behind the symbolic mark of the beast. The next stage of the infestation phenomenon would have been complete human possession. Had these experiences lasted another 2 or 3 more weeks, the spirit would have completely possessed, if not haunted or killed, one of the occupants in the house. At the conclusion of the investigation, the Warrens felt it appropriate to have a recitation of an exorcism blessing by Father Cook to cleanse the apartment. The Episcopal blessing of the home is wordy, 7-page document that is distinctly positive in nature. Rather than specifically expelling evil entities from the dwelling, the emphasis is instead directed towards filling the home with the power of the positive of a God. At Donna's request, and as a further precaution against the phenomenon ever occurring in the home again, the Warrens took the big rag doll along with them when they left. Father Cook, although uncomfortable with his role as an exorcist, agreed to perform the 7-page rite of exorcism, a doctrine he recited through the apartment, at which point the Warrens were confident the entity would no longer reside there. They agreed to take the rag doll back home with them. Upon Ed placed the doll in the back seat of his car and agreed he would not take the interstate in the event the inhuman spirit still resided in the doll. His suspicions were all too correct, and in no time the Warrens felt themselves as the object of a vicious hatred. Then, at each dangerous curve, the car swerved and stalled at every other corner, causing the power and steering brakes to fail. Repeatedly, the car verged on collision. Ed reached into the back seat, into his black bag, and took out a vial of holy water and doused the doll, making the sign of the cross over it. The disturbances stopped immediately, and the Warrens arrived safely home. After the Warrens arrived home, Ed sat the doll in a chair next to his desk. The doll levitated a number of times in the beginning, then it seemed to fall inert. During the ensuing weeks, however, it began showing up in various rooms of the house. When the Warrens were away and they had the doll locked up in the outer office building, they would often return to find it sitting comfortably upstairs in Ed's easy chair when they opened the main door. The doll also showed a hatred for clergymen who came into the house. In one instance, Father Jason Bradford, a Catholic exorcist, came into the house. Upon seeing the doll seated in the chair, he picked it up and said, "You're just a rag doll, Annabelle. You can't hurt anyone," and tossed the doll back in the chair, at which point Ed exclaimed, "That's one thing you better not say." Upon leaving the house later, Lorraine pleaded with the priest to please be careful driving and to call her when he arrived home. Lorraine discerned tragedy for this young priest, but he had to go his way. A few hours later, Father Jason called Lorraine and explained that his brakes had failed and he as he entered a busy intersection. He was involved in a near-fatal accident, destroying his vehicle. Just one of the many events that occurred over the next few years. The Warrens had a special case built for Annabelle inside their occult museum, where she resides to this day. Since the case was built, Annabelle no longer appeared to move, but she is thought to be responsible for the death of a young man who came to the museum on a motorcycle with his girlfriend. The young man, after hearing Ed's account of the doll, defiantly went up and began to bang on the case, insisting that if the doll can put scratches on people, then he wanted to also be scratched. Ed said to put to the young man, "Son, you need to leave," and put him out of the building. On the way home, the young man and his girlfriend were laughing and making fun of the doll when he lost control of his motorcycle and went head-on into a tree. The young man was killed instantly, and the girlfriend survived and was hospitalized for over a year. When asked what happened, the young woman explained that they were laughing about the doll when they lost control of the motorcycle. Ed warns, "You do not challenge evil, that no man is more powerful than Satan." And that's the story of Annabelle, kids.
Wow, that makes me want to think twice about doing Elf on the Shelf at Christmas.
Elf on the Shelf is not evil.
No, but seriously, it sounds like, I mean, the first part, you know, where the doll's doing little things and writing little notes.
Well, but we do that with the doll.
Well, I know, but that's where my mind went with it. It's like a demonic Elf on the Shelf.
Well, here, if your Elf on the Shelf started doing that stuff on its own, yes, I agree, that would be kind of scary.
Yeah. Anyway,
we should do an Annabelle for Halloween.
No,
we could get a Raggedy Ann doll, and 30 days leading up to Halloween, we have Raggedy Ann or Annabelle in different positions around the house, just like Elf on the Shelf.
No, I don't think so.
I smell a huge marketing opportunity here.
Wow. I think that's asking for trouble.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, do you think if you try to emulate a case like this, like we're literally, if you took a Raggedy Ann doll, named it Annabelle, and kind of mocked it. I mean, you having never had contact with Annabelle or anything of the sort, other than just knowing the story, do you think that could conjure something up just by almost kind of poking fun at it, you know, from that sort of a...
This show is proof that stranger things have happened.
Yeah, that's true.
So I would say I'm not going to.
It's
even
almost like
you're
inviting evil in.
Yes.
By pretending, oh, and telling the kids, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because one of these, what would happen is you'd start doing it the first couple nights, you would be setting it up, and then you'd set it up one night, and then you'd go out the next morning, and it's set up in a completely different position than what you left it.
Yeah, I think it's a bad deal.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
But what I don't understand is why they felt the need to do a whole different Annabelle story. Because you can't, in my opinion, you can't beat a good true story. And this sounds like plenty to do a whole movie from.
I don't know, because honestly, I think a lot of this was explained in like the first 20 minutes of The Conjuring.
Yeah.
Almost that entire story was spelled out. So I'm wondering if they just kind of almost essentially blew it the first time with The Conjuring, because they got through that whole thing where really it was almost that should have had its own movie.
Yeah.
I don't really understand why it was put out in like these two stories in the one movie that were completely unrelated. I get kind of setting up showing, hey, it's a spooky story, but The Conjuring itself was scary enough.
Was it maybe to try and bring some notoriety to the film? I mean,
I don't know. I mean, because Annabelle was also a fairly unknown.
It was? Okay.
You know, unless you're really into it, okay. You know, paranormal stuff, you wouldn't have really known about it. But I don't know. And the way that The Conjuring ended was, Ed got a call from someone in upstate New York about a case they were supposed to go and investigate, which turned out to be Amityville. I think that could be an interesting movie. Their take on the Amityville.
Yeah.
Not necessarily, you know, the same old Amityville story that we've heard in the book and that we saw in the first movie, but more so what the Warrens' take was on it. Because they actually, what happened was they were involved in a seance in the home after the whole incident occurred. I believe, oh gosh, what's the dad's name?
George?
George Lutz was present for that as well. And there were some reporters present as well. And this is when the Ghost Boy picture was taken. You've seen the Ghost Right. Boy picture, haven't you?
Yeah.
Little boy looking over the railing with the glowing eyes.
Or a adult kneeling down with glasses on.
Yeah, that was the other account of that. Where did we hear... That was the account that the documentarian had on that.
Yeah.
Of that. Yeah, there was a lot of cases on that. I still think it looks like a ghost boy.
Think so?
I think there's a lot of people that look at that and go, that's... I don't... Somebody else. I don't know. But it would be interesting to see a movie done about that seance that happened and just what their take was on it. Mm-hmm. You know, you can get through the story of the movie pretty quick and don't focus on it and make it a more factual Amityville movie. For the first time ever, have more of the real true story being told. Because it is a scary-ass tale when you are basing it on what the facts are. It's one of those stories that doesn't necessarily need a lot of embellishment.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's the case here, too.
Yeah. I do want to... That being said, though, I still do want to see the Annabelle movie. But from what I've seen in the preview, it looks like nothing is related to the reality of the situation or the story. So... Wow. It is what it is. 855-853-4802. If you have a real ghost story, 855-853-4802 to share your real ghost story with us. We would absolutely love to hear it. Let's go to a caller. Hi, you're on Real Ghost Stories Online.
Hi, Tony. This is Beatrice. I'm calling again with another couple of ghost stories. These did happen to me. Once again, they take place in Guatemala, Central America. And this time around, I'll probably have to call a couple of times to get them all in. I want to tell you the stories that happened on the college campus I went to law school at. It's a private university. I'm not going to say the name because it would be recognizable if anyone from that country would listen to the show. Basically, it was a very new university, the building. When I went to school there, it was only, the university as such was only 35 years old. And the concept the founders had for the building was very ecological. They didn't want to touch much of the surroundings, and they actually built or wound up building the whole campus in a ravine. And it's a very interesting building because it's basically two buildings with a little Japanese garden in the middle with a fish pond, the little walking trails. And the first building is from floor 1 to 4, and the second building goes up from floor 3 to 7, and 7 is actually the faculty parking lot. I guess a little backstory to this is that when they bought this property back in the 70s, I'm assuming, the Civil War that was going on in Guatemala was going strong. By the time I was in school, I started school there, college, in 1986. Civil War was winding down, but still, every Monday, you would have the police and the authorities over at the provisional campus wanting to speak to the school's administrator because they had found bodies dumped in the ravine where later the campus would be built. So it has a lot of violent history, the ravine, if we could say that. I don't know if the people whose bodies were found there were actually executed there or it was just a big old dumping ground. The university campus was finally ready to be used in the second semester of 1987. And 5 years later, you do the math, the library was finally open, this huge library that was previously being housed on the first floor of the first building, and it was really cramped. But they built this humongous four-story building for the library, and it was the biggest in its class back in the early 90s, late 80s. So it was a beautiful library. And since this is pre-internet stages, we still had the audiovisual equipment that would be dragged into classrooms. And in this library housed the audiovisual room, which everyone would joke that was under seven doors and seven locks and keys. But what was really true was that the only people who had the keys to the audiovisuals were the librarian, the director, and the guy who was in charge of the audiovisuals. My college boyfriend got a part-time job at the library, so I got this firsthand from him. When they opened up the library, you know, big cocktail and grand opening, the next day when the guy who's in charge of the audiovisuals unlocked the seven locks and the seven doors to get to the equipment he had to take to the other building, he found a puddle of what looked like blood. Now, this is the audiovisual room. There's no windows, no other door than the one he came through, and like I said before, only two people had the key to that. So they did call authorities, they did take samples, and it was human blood. No one, up to this day, no one knows how the blood got there, and I really never heard if blood reappeared in that area ever again. So that was really strange. But by then, I was already studying to pass my bar exam down there, and I was cramming along with a friend who had been in school a year before me, and we had gotten special authorization from the school. It was a small school. It still is by the standards, to use a classroom when the library closed Saturday afternoon, and to be able to use a classroom to study in on Sundays. And we were doing a really hard schedule from 8 in the morning until 10 at night. We would just break for food. And sometimes, well, we would get bored of studying inside the classroom, and we would sit outside in the hallways. But it was an open-faced building, so you could enjoy the Japanese garden down in the middle. And we would watch the elevators just turn on by themselves without anyone actually pressing a button in any floor. And from where we were sitting, we could see the elevator from the third floor all the way up to the seventh floor. And these elevators would do this little dance. They would open and close. They would go up and down, open and close. No one would get in. No one would get out. So we actually reported this to the school authorities, and they didn't believe us. But then there were also some medicine students, who were using the fifth floor. They were studying for, I think, a Stillman scholarship or something like that. And they started reporting it. So one of the authorities stayed a weekend after hours with us, and she got to see the elevator do its little dance. They called the elevator repair people the next week, and they found nothing wrong with the elevators except saying that it was technically or mechanically impossible for the elevators to be moving on their own if no one was pressing the buttons calling them from different floors. And I have no idea if that still goes on. But the big story I want to tell you is one that happened to me, and I knew I got haunted in retrospect. So it was around, I'm going to say, fall, winter, although there is no seasons down there. It's always spring, but it would qualify as fall, winter. There were these two young pre-med students who were using another classroom on the sixth floor where my friend and I were using a classroom. And it was really hilarious because they would party every night, Monday to Friday, and then they would get their classmates' notes, cram all weekend for the quizzes on Monday. So they basically told us that some nights they were sleeping in the classroom over the weekend just to cram for the tests. I walked in on a Sunday, and our classroom, the one my friend and I were using, was full of debris. It had soda bottles, it had half-eaten nachos, it had a bunch of leftovers from food wrappers, and since it was our compromise to keep the classroom clean and orderly, or else we weren't going to get the authorization to use it, I was extremely angry. I marched down the hall to where I knew these kids were, and I accused them, "Did you guys leave a mess in the classroom we're using?" And they were not really happy, not because I was accusing them, but they said, "Yeah, we're sorry. We thought we were going to have time to clean it up, but, you know, we're still scared." "What are you scared of?" So they basically told me that the previous night, which would have been Saturday night, one of them was drifting off to sleep under the blackboard, and the other one was sitting in a desk or a little table, and it had to be around 10 or 11 o'clock at night. Every floor on both buildings have bathrooms at the end of the hallway, a ladies' room and a gentleman's room, and they're both side by side. The second floor of the first building, which is the administrative floor, the bathroom, the ladies' room there, is very small because there's no classrooms on that floor. So it basically has two stalls, two sinks, and that's it. The security guards, once we started with my friend, we started talking to them if anything strange had happened to them, told us the story. And I did confirm it with the old people, well, not the old people, but the old employees who are no longer there. They've retired since. And it was basically that there was a secretary using the facilities in one of the stalls, and she felt she was being watched. You're in a stall. Where can you be watched from? Either from underneath the stall or from above it. So she's basically looking down, and there's nothing weird happening there, and she looks up, and peering over the top of the next stall, there's an old man. Now, the toilet is in the middle of the stall, so the guy would have had to been over, I'm going to say, 6 feet or 7 feet to be able to peer over the top of the stall. Because if you stand on the toilet, you couldn't be right next to the stall. The toilet's in the middle. So she screamed, and she ran out of the ladies' room, I think, with her panties halfway up. I mean, it was this big scandal. And they rushed in, and they didn't see anything. And then after this occurred, security guards would report that when they were doing their tour of campus, they would, for example, be on the second building, on the sixth floor of the second building, and remember, since it's open faced, they can see all the way to the first building because of the open garden in the middle, and they would see an old man walking through the hallway of the second floor of the first building. They would radio, and they would rush to the second, to the first building, and by the time they got there, the old man would be walking through the hall of the sixth floor of the second building. Needless to say, up to this day, that bathroom on the second floor of the first building, the ladies' room, is locked. And when I've told this story to students who are there currently, I've always invited them to go check out to see if the bathroom is locked, and it is. So basically, the campus is haunted. I know that. It's a beautiful campus. It's like I said, they didn't tear down any trees but those that were necessary. It's beautiful gardens and all that. But what is true is that it was a dumping ground, if not an execution ground, during the Civil War. And there were a lot of bodies that had to be recognized or identified and picked up from that ravine. To this day, And when it was being built, the people who were the construction workers did report that they would find a lot of garments, female garments, male garments, undergarments, just thrown about with blood and stuff. So, well, that's my story, and I hope to be able to either write or call in again with stories from another part of that city. The city is very haunted. It was built, all Guatemala City was built over Caminal Huyu, which is a Mayan burial ground. And my home is actually built upon the ceremonial section of Caminal Huyu, and my house is surrounded by the temples, which they thought were temples, but they're actual graves, those little pyramids. So I've got a couple of stories of those. Well, thank you very much. I'm sorry it was so long, and I may not be the best storyteller, but thanks a lot for listening. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I think anytime you build your house on sacred ground or burial grounds or battlegrounds or really any sort of grounds where there's mass death involved at any point in history, probably a good recipe for bad shit to start happening.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Okay, so the ghost of the old man was doing some questionable things as a ghost. Is that because he was that kind of person in life, or is that something taking on a personification of a harmless old man?
That's always interesting when you have the perverted ghost going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it makes you wonder if it is something that maybe the human did in life, or it's just a dark, I don't know, because usually when these things are like this and it's a fairly dark spirit, it's never really anything good, and it's just trying to almost, in my opinion, I think, get into situations that make people uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Oh, what do you think?
I could see it going either way. I could see it being somebody that did that in their life, but then I could also see, oh, you see a old man. Oh, no big deal. And then it's
okay. You could look over the
No, spell. No. I just mean
just
like when they would
man.
See him wandering through the other building, you
Bad
know.
Grandpa.
Bad grandpa. Bad grandpa. Yeah. Yes, exactly. No, I wonder if it's a demonic presence that's taking that as its form.
I kind of get that feeling about a lot of stories from that area.
Yeah.
That it's never really anything all that good.
Yeah.
A lot of them always seem to be fairly dark. You rarely hear the story in that area. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we'll get a story. But you never really hear, as far as what I've seen or heard, of, you know, the kindly old ghost grandmother that's looking over the children.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that I don't know why that is. I don't know the reason. Because when there are those deaths and those mass graves and all that horrible thing, so those were normal people once, too. So I don't know why so much of it is seemingly, like, demonic. But it seems to be, for whatever reason. Insight, anyone? You're welcome to throw it our way, and I'd love to hear it.
Okay, and granted, I'm the rookie here. Is it because such a huge act of evil was committed in killing all those people there?
Sure, but then why would there not be, you know, at least some normalcy, if you will, if you consider a ghost normal, you know, a human spirit normal, you know, haunting the area? Why isn't there more of that that we're hearing? Or maybe there are. Maybe there are. We just don't hear about it because they're the fairly harmless ones, and the ones that are getting the attention are the real evil, dark things that are going on. You know? I mean, I could see it kind of almost being like, hey, what's the worst, you know, out of the top 10 ghost stories you had this week? Because if you're having a lot of crap going on, I'm guessing the dark spirits kind of rank a lot higher than the poltergeist that's moving your water glass around the living room or something, you know, something
right.
like that.
Right. Now, I was just wondering if something that happens that has that much evil attached mm-hmm. to it, if that can conjure up something demonic.
I could see. I mean, I'm wondering if, you know, when you have those dark things, you know, if something evil hadn't already been conjured up that caused
That's
those
true.
Things to begin with, and now it's still living on, essentially in the aftermath of those situations. 855-853-4802 is our phone number to call in. 855-853-4802. Leo writes in, "Hi, Tony. I'm just trying to share what I was told regarding one of the stories you read. It's the one about the grandfather watching over the grandmother that couldn't hear. Anyway, I was told by my friend, a clairvoyant, that when we die, we either go to heaven or hell, or we're reincarnated, or we come back as a guardian angel. Now, the last part made sense to me. Maybe the grandfather is watching over the grandmother. Also, he told me that my soul is an old soul, which makes sense in a way. I think that I have a Frank Sinatra station on my Pandora app, and some of the songs sound familiar to me. When I first created the station, I started hearing a song from Nat King Cole, Louis Armstrong. When some of the songs would come on, I got a weird feeling. It's hard to describe, but it's like I knew the song, but didn't know the lyrics. I remember my fiancé asked me how I know these songs, but I have no clue. I don't remember hearing the music ever in my life. My parents are from Mexico, so I was brought up listening to Spanish music. Anyway, I just thought I would share that with you. By the way, the other night I was listening to your episode on my phone. I was 20 minutes into the show, and it just restarted on its own coincidence. Who knows? Thanks for your time. I'll share more stories in the future due to time. Thanks for your time."
Maybe it's a past life that he's having memories of.
Or maybe he just really innately likes Frank Sinatra music. I mean, I don't know.
Have you...
If he went into the story saying, "I know the lyrics to these songs," I'd be like, okay.
Hey.
You got a case.
There are songs from our lifetime that we are like, yeah, I remember that song. I couldn't tell you what all the lyrics are, but you remember it.
Sure.
When you hear it, you know how the music goes. You maybe not know all the words.
Sure.
There's a lot of songs from the 90s. I still don't understand the words. I can't hear it because it's all
screaming.
You just
sing your own version of it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I could go either way on that. I mean, it's an interesting observation that, you know, he has this interesting sense of being drawn to the music and not having it having been something that he grew up around, which is what normally... you could kind of attribute some of those things back to, where you go, "I really like this music and I don't know why." Oh, your parents listen to it obsessively around you when you're in the crib. But if that's not what happened, it is interesting that he does have that connection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I won't completely discount it. I do think music is an interesting thing. I think you can be easily drawn to certain things that you may have never heard before, and it may have nothing to do with previous life. It's just certain things speak to certain people in different ways, and you just kind of discover it.
But how do you know it doesn't have anything to do with a previous life?
I'm not saying I don't. I'm just saying I don't know that is it either.
Because I know there's things that I'm drawn to that I have no reason to be drawn to them. It does not fit anything.
Like Titanic?
That's one thing. Yeah. But there are some other things that, and it's like, why would a 30-something be drawn to this at all?
I don't know. I always kind of wonder that with Titanic, though, myself. I don't know, to our listeners. As children, we were both obsessed with Titanic, and we grew up in completely different states, didn't know each other. But we found out later in life that we had this obsession with Titanic as children.
Yes.
I was into it, deeply into it, you know, at a very young age, you know, like first grade, second grade, third grade. And I was drawing pictures of the ship sinking. I mean, it's all stuff I'd seen on movies or in books, but I would go to the library and that's all I wanted to get books on. I don't know why I was obsessed with it. I still really enjoy the topic and I'm very interested in it, but I don't know why I was drawn to it as a first grader.
Did you ever dream about it? Did you ever dream that you were on the ship?
Not that I recall, no.
I did.
Really?
I did a lot. And I have very vivid dreams where I'm on the ship and it's going down, and I don't remember having loved ones with me, but I remember getting into the water, and I don't remember anything after that. I wake up after that.
This is keep in mind, pre-movie, right?
Yes, we're talking, this is the very early 90s, because
yes,
we're both very young. After I, you know, immediately was drawn to it once I heard about it for the first time. I'll never forget this kid in my class. He was the mean kid. And he brought this up, and I went home and asked about what it was. And my mom gave me the the nice sugar-coated explanation or the very quick version of it was a big ship and a lot of people died. And
but all the ponies survived.
No, and then so I wanted to start learning about it, and through National Geographic and some other things I learned mm-hmm. about it, and then I became obsessed about it.
Yeah.
And I started having dreams to where I was on the ship.
Mm-hmm. What was interesting about the topic is when we had a chance to hear Robert Ballard speak about it, he said that one of the most shocking things about his exploration and when he found the Titanic was the influx of mail and letters that he would get from kids mm-hmm. our age at the time, you know, who were elementary students who had this fascination with it, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, you know, the children of the, you know, mid to late 80s were really fascinated with that when he discovered it. And I mean, I know it was a National Geographic. I remember looking at that issue. I can picture that issue. I can picture the special.
I know, the fold out where it showed the size compared to buildings.
And why we were all so fascinated with it, I don't know. I mean, I didn't know anybody else in my school who had that fascination, but I was very interested to hear that. I mean, not only you, obviously, when we discovered that, but that there was all these other kids, you know, randomly that had this interest in it.
But I have to say, you are the only other person that I've ever come across that's ever appreciated that obsession as much as I have, or was that obsessed with it as much as I was.
Do you think it's a past life thing?
I've wondered it. I don't even want to open that can of worms.
I've never had anything where I've ever felt, and I'm not dismissing the past life thing at all. So don't take it like that. I'm just saying that I personally have never had anything where I have any recollections of a past life or feel like I was from a different era or anything. I could see some different eras where I think I would have fit in pretty well and really enjoy like some of the styles and some of the culture of different eras. But I've never like been, oh my God, I felt like I've, you know, been there or a part of it. I've just felt, you know, kind of drawn and interested more than like, wow, and this is me.
I don't want to go so far as to say it's a past life thing. I think it's inexplicable why I'm so drawn to it. Mm-hmm. I don't understand that. And I don't understand why I can dream vividly. I can navigate my way around that ship, trying to stay out of the water.
I don't know.
It's very, very strange. And that's why I think part of it was such an emotional experience when we went to the museum and we saw the artifacts that came out of the water.
I'm going to ask you this because I know our listeners are thinking this in their head and they're going to want to ask you this. In your dream, do you recall the imaginary friend that was essentially dressed like the era in it?
No, I don't.
Okay.
In the dream, I'm
probably
always...
Probably two separate, totally.
In the dream, I'm always alone.
Okay. I just thought I'd ask because of the era that you said that you saw him... You know, his clothing and style, it does kind of fit that.
I think he was later than that. I think that he was, you know, not a lot later, but I think he was later than that.
Okay.
But no, for whatever reason, I don't ever feel sad. I'm not looking for family or anything. I'm always by myself.
Interesting.
And I don't think I make it. I really don't. I think I'm one of those women that didn't get on the boat.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. 855-853-4802 is the phone number to call in if you have a real ghost story or would love to profess your obsession with Titanic to us as well. We'll make us feel
less dorky. That'd be great.
Another letter coming into us. This is from Ivan. Ivan says it all started in a small town in York, South Carolina. I just moved into a huge house. It looked like it had been built in the 1800s. It was nice, but it was really, what was really nice about it was the size of it. It's one of the biggest houses in the neighborhood. I was in the 7th grade, and every day after school, me and my little brother would play basketball. In the backyard, there was a basketball court and a bunch of woods behind the basketball court, so we'd always play till dark. On a particular day, we went out to play. Everything was going good till I took a shot at the basket, and I got the rune from rune. It bounced into the woods. I don't know what rune from rune is, but it's a... It's rune from rune. R-U-I-N from R-U to the... Got the rune from the ruin. It bounced out into the... I don't know. Continuing on. Now, from done apparent reason, I had rarely gone back there inside the woods, even in the daylight. I found it creepy, and now even more creepier since I had got the ball at night. It was a must that I get it because we had to finish the game off, so I quickly went into the woods and scanned around for the ball. I got to pick it up. I'm lifting the ball. I decided to look up, and what I saw turned me stone cold. It was a misty figure of a ghost. I could see him so clearly, though. It was like someone had a flashlight, a light behind him because he had a bright white glow. He was an elderly man. He stood straight up, had curly white hair that hung to his ears. He also had a full and squinty eyes, a very particular suit on. He was wearing an American Civil War jacket with big buttons, and he had medals on it. I could not see the bottoms he was wearing because they were not there. Only his torso was visible. I stared at him for about 10 seconds till I was able to move. He began to open his mouth as to say something, but as soon as he did, I ran away so fast in my house, my heart was beating so loud, as I felt it was going to pop out of my chest. While I ran to the house, I hadn't even noticed that I had ran past my little brother. He came in with a basketball in his hands and asked why I had dropped it as I ran past him and ran into the house. I told him I saw a ghost, but he didn't believe me. Later, we ended up moving to North Carolina, and as the days went by, I couldn't sleep. I was having trouble sleeping. One day, I woke up around 3 a.m. I opened my eyes and found myself in my room, and everything was peaceful. I looked around on the floor and saw where I had put my soccer ball before I went to sleep. Suddenly, I started hearing this loud ringing sound in the distance. I could hear it getting closer and closer until it was unbearable. At this point in time, I'm still lying in bed with my arms on the side. As I go to raise them to cover my ears from the noise, I feel this tremendous pressure on my torso, and I could not move. I started to panic. My skin began to get goosebumps, and I began to feel very itchy. I got up, and tears were running down my eyes, and I left with this feeling of sorrow and began to cry. I don't know why. Maybe because I felt so close to death. I could not sleep for the rest of the night. I ended up telling my mom, and she said a prayer for me. Then about a week later, I had the same experience, and I told a pastor about it, and he said that it was not good, and I should pray for help. One day, I had the courage to tell my friend what was going on. We were at his house, and I was just sitting around, and I began the conversation by asking him if anything scary had happened to him before. He said yes, and I said things had happened to me as well. He requested that he go first, and what he said next sent waves of chills down my spine and about made me cry too. He told me the exact same event that had been happening to him, word for word. Literally scared me, and I told him that what had been happening to me as well. Eventually, I did my research and found out what all had been going on. The town in South Carolina I used to live in was a battleground, and ever since then, I've been connected with these supernatural experiences. There you go.
So, some people that experience these things, they have like their initial experience and then they kind of can pick up things easier from then on? Or is it just like this? Because he said that because it was a battleground and ever since then he's had experiences, is that pretty common?
Common for people to have the same experiences?
No, what I mean is it common for somebody to have an experience and then they're more sensitive to paranormal from then on?
I don't know. I think it may open some more people up to be more aware of what's going on around them, just because you have a lot of folks who, with so many of the letters they begin with, at first I didn't believe in ghosts or anything, and then
Sure. Shit
hits the fan and, you know, something's living in their room. And then suddenly they're much more aware of all the weird and dark things that are going on around them. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it opens. I think it depends what it is. If you're opening a door to something and it is something dark and demonic or something, and essentially you're letting it in. I just think you're seeing more of it because it was let in. In other cases, if it's completely unrelated events, I think you may just be more aware, more accepting of what it is, and not just writing it off as wind or something else.
Sure.
Okay. That's my opinion on it anyway.
No, I just didn't know if you're more prone to it after you've had one for sure experience.
I think it's interesting in that story where he said that his friend told him that he was having the same experiences and the same, you know, almost the same story, almost like that almost, you know, it sounds like whatever it was kind of repeated itself in some sort of a pattern, you know, to multiple people.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. I mean, it would be really interesting if we and it ever got a story here that we read and then someone else in the same area ends up writing and going, this exact same thing happened to me, like the same events or very close to the same sort of events.
Yeah,
you know, same pattern. Just because I could see that happening. You do have stories of paranormal where the reference I always go back to is the one that I had heard of so frequently when I lived in Wausau, Wisconsin, of this woman that was carrying a baby up and down a stairwell. Granted, that's a very brief experience. If you have it, you're seeing a woman carrying a baby up and down a stairwell. Ghostly experience nonetheless, but multiple people have had the same experience. So it's not like it's a different ghost every time or you know, entity that's doing it. But it's interesting when it's a more drawn out experience. It's like, yes, he saw the thing in the woods, and then they saw the thing in his bedroom. And what's interesting about that one to me is that the woods almost sounds like, okay, it was a soldier ghost. The one in his bedroom sounds like some sort of weird demonic entity hanging out on the ceiling.
Yeah.
It almost sounds like it could be an unrelated experience, but if his friend had the same sort of thing, I don't know.
Well, I don't know either. I mean, I guess I'm unclear. Were the friends together when they saw the thing in the woods, or were they just, is this just separate experiences altogether?
I think it was totally separate experiences.
Okay.
Because when he was playing ball with his brother or something, went in there by himself.
Okay.
And then the friend, I guess, had the same sort of experience.
Maybe it's something to do with the area.
Oh yeah, very much so with the battleground.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Dark experience, nonetheless. If you have a real ghost story, you can write into us. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. If you want to call in your real ghost story, we would absolutely love to hear it. And of course, we ask you to please share the show. Let a friend know about it. And hey, if you got a couple extra seconds after you're done listening to today's episode, some stars on the iTunes or Stitcher or whatever platform you're listening to us on, it helps us grow, helps more folks know about the show, and gets you a better show every single time we deliver one to you here at Real Ghost Stories Online. So, for Jenny Brewski, I am Tony Brewski, and thank you for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.